Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome to our Mobility Management Podcast. Today, I'm joined once again by Don Clayback, Executive Director of NCART, and McKay Lee, who is NCART's Associate Director. So my goal for 2021 is to check in with Don and McKay on a quarterly basis as Complex Rehab navigates the ongoing public health emergency, as well as some other advocacy and policy projects. I think it would be great to catch up with them once a quarter. So, Don and McKay, welcome back to our podcast.
Hey, thanks. Well,
thanks, Lori.
I was thinking about this time of the year and how I'm usually seeing the both of you in person. I see at least one of you at every conference I go to, I think. And while I was thinking about the different travel situation this year, I was coincidentally taking care of my friend of NCART membership invoice. So I know you're in the middle of an NCART membership campaign right now. I wanted to ask a few questions as a demonstration of how our membership dues are used to advance complex rehab and consumer access to CRT, most importantly. So I'm going to start off a little bit differently with this podcast. I'm going to do a little lightning round of questions for you. And when it comes to travel, I'm going to ask you to think about 2019, since 2020 was a very different kind of year. So let's start for 2019. Roughly how many business trips did each of you take? And we'll define business trip as something that required an overnight stay in a hotel.
That's a great question, Lori. And definitely, as you said, it was we've got two different years we're looking at. Last year was a little different in terms of, a lot different, I should say, relative to the pandemic setting. But basically, if we look at our traditional year, which we go back to 2019, probably on average, between McKay and I, each of us are doing, you know, 20 to 25 trips a year. That could be for a variety of types of events, industry conferences, trade shows, meeting with legislators. That could be in Washington or at a state level at certain state capitals. And then there might be hearings that we'd be attending and representing the CRT industry. We're also having meetings with some of the CRT advocacy partners, some of the consumer and disability groups that we partner with. So a variety of events, but that's generally the workload, if you will, or the travel load that we typically have.
Okay, that's a lot, first of all. Now, how many meetings in person or via conference call do you additionally average in a week?
These days, and I know that, you know, this certainly isn't unique to us, Lori. I think everyone is dealing with, you know, some extra virtual meetings and things like that. But I would say that we average somewhere around, you know, 25 to 35 group calls or meetings a week between, you know, Don and myself. And, you know, that varies from week to week, but there's never a shortage of work to keep moving. And, you know, we're happy to be leading the charge in those discussions. We're happy to be a part of it and thankful for those who are joining us and taking the time to help us determine what advocacy steps and what strategies need to be taken next.
Okay, and both of you work full-time for NCART. Does NCART have any other full or part-time employees on staff right now?
We do. We have an administrative coordinator. Her name is Debbie, and she's just fantastic. Debbie helps us stay organized, which is so important, and in good communication with our members. So folks who, you know, our members may see emails and updates coming from Debbie every once in a while. She joined us part-time back in the summer of 2019, and she's just been a wonderful addition to the NCART team.
And now I want to look at logistically what it takes NCART to keep rolling. Obviously, office space, utilities, computers, those sorts of things. What other operational costs are needed for you to carry out your daily activities?
Oh, well, you know, I'm guessing that chocolate doesn't fit on the list, but it's definitely something I keep handy. But we do technically have three separate offices since we all work remotely. So we do have some utilities, you know, office supplies, software, the phones and things like you mentioned that are required to keep operations and our staff working efficiently. There's also costs associated with things like maintaining our website, our webinar platform for the CRT industry webinars, video conferencing platforms for those meetings we were just talking about, and our advocacy software that we use for our grassroots efforts. You know, protectmymobility.org is a software that we use to help CRT advocates communicate with either their members of Congress or with their state legislatures or any other important policymakers that we're trying to get the CRT message across to. So again, I think another thing we could mention is that in non-pandemic years, we also have those travel expenses that we mentioned, and that includes things like, you know, our printed materials, our handouts, conference materials that we may need and other expenses like, you know, typically food and hotel, things like that.
Let's bullet point what's on your plate right now, because I know there are a few big ongoing projects, such as the separate CRT benefit category for Medicare and ongoing work, obviously, on accessories and components for CRT manual wheelchairs. But sometimes I forget that you also have to be ready to simultaneously pivot and work on Medicaid projects, for example, or the pandemic comes up and you're suddenly working on telehealth and remote services efforts and what's involved in a public health emergency declaration. So can you give us a rough idea of how many projects are on your plate right now?
Yeah, Lori, I think there's, as you said, there's a lot going on, and one of the things we've learned over the years is we really need to be able to be flexible and pivot. There isn't a better illustration than last year when, you know, we had our year pretty well planned out in January, and then come February and March, we have the pandemic that added a whole new dimension to the year. So we have some basic items that we've identified. We look to our board of directors and our committee chairs to help give us input in how we identify and prioritize the items that we're going to be working on. You mentioned some of the items. If I was to bullet point, the first item would be our work on the CRT manual wheelchair accessories, preventing cuts that right now will go into effect as of July 1, unless CMS or Congress takes action. We're working on coverage of seat elevation and standing for power wheelchairs under the Medicare program. That's a big initiative that we're collaborating with the ITEM Coalition and others on, and will bring big benefits to people that use power wheelchairs. On the telehealth side, which is another big project that we've been working on throughout the year, we're focused on making the policies that have been put in place during the pandemic permanent. The next would be really our state work. As you mentioned, on the Medicaid side, there's always a variety of issues that are coming up during the course of the year in terms of Medicaid issues that we address on an as-needed basis. But on a high-level basis, we're being attentive to potential budget cuts that states may have to be considering as part of the pandemic expenses. So we're working on making sure those cuts don't impact, one, if they happen to, we make sure that they don't impact CRT items and the negative consequences that would come from that. And then finally, as you mentioned, the work on the separate category, we're evaluating what the best path for this year will be on that. So a variety of things that we're working on. And then in addition, we do our usual, you know, we've got our monthly webinars. We partner with other organizations on initiatives that they may be working on that we can lend our voice to. So there's always that kind of primary list, but there's plenty of other things that kind of fall into that, I'll say secondary, but not to diminish them, but other things that we need to be working on as the year progresses.
Okay, so is it fair to say that you've got, on any given day, you've got these projects that are long-term projects, like a separate benefit category, and then you've got some ones that kind of crop up, right? Like Medicaid issues in a certain state that you immediately have to pivot. We need to put some attention on that. Or we need to talk to people about how to get PPE. We need to think about what the pandemic is going to do to telehealth. So there are some big projects that are kind of always in the works. They're long-term projects, but you also have to be able to pivot and handle these other projects that come up very suddenly in a very timely manner but are no less important. Is that kind of a fair way to look at it?
Yeah, that is. And I think it also underscores the fact that, as people say, the devil's in the details. Like, all of those initiatives have all sorts of, you know, sub-initiatives that support them. So we've got, you know, various components that fall under those larger initiatives. And then, as you mentioned, we've got things that just come up that just need to be addressed. And triaging is an important part of our process at NCAR in terms of making sure we can keep the ball moving on any issue that impacts access and then balance that with our resources. Just as an example, on the Medicaid front, I mean, we typically probably have actions going on in 6 or 7 states at a time, you know, in terms of individual items. And over and above that would be the work that I mentioned around monitoring the budget and making sure that CRT cuts would not be part of the state's plan. And two, Lori, I think it's important to recognize that we don't do all our work on our own. Thankfully, we've got a lot of great partnerships that allow us to accomplish what we have had in the past and then what we're working on in the future. So, McKay, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And Lori, like you said, it can feel a little bit like whack-a-mole just because things tend to pop up. not when you least expect them, but almost predictably, you know that there are going to be a lot of issues, like Don said, that fall under those larger categories of our main priorities for any given year. And so we are incredibly thankful for the committees and the volunteers and the other advocates, the other advocacy organizations, whether those are, you know, consumer organizations or whether those are disability advocacy organizations. You know, we've always said that when the CRT community comes together to work on an issue, that's when we really see the most success. That's when we see the most change. And so we are incredibly thankful that we have such a great team of individuals who step in and offer their wisdom and their expertise and their time and their energy to help us protect access to complex rehab. It certainly makes our job a lot less stressful in a lot of different ways and allows us to, like Don said, keep that ball rolling and make sure that, you know, the work that needs to get done is getting done.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for answering those questions. I just wanted to kind of understand more concretely the work that you're doing every day. And since this happens to be the time of the year that you do focus on membership, I'll close out this part by asking if a CRT manufacturer, provider, clinician, or an industry friend wants more information on joining NCART, what's the best follow-up advice for them?
Thanks, Laura. Yeah, and that's a great question, and we're happy to share that information because really we work on a lot of various initiatives, but the reason we're able to do that is because of the support of our members. You know, our members help fund the things that we talked about at the start of the podcast, but also, you know, when it comes to hiring lobbyists or having research done by outside consultants, all different things that are part of our structure, our membership dollars really are what supports those initiatives. And we're happy to talk to any manufacturer provider that's not an NCART member. The first thing we also always try and do is thank our current members because, again, their support is what's enabled us to make the progress that we have over the many years. But if someone is not a member, they could go to our website, www.ncart.us, and there's membership information there. Or certainly reach out to McKay or I. We're happy to have that dialogue. But the membership is really what drives our ability to accomplish things. And I think as we all agree, the issues are not decreasing. I think it's becoming a more challenging environment. And what we talk to prospective members about is we think NCART is really a great investment for their business. It enables them to participate in protecting advocacy so that both their business and the interest of their customers remains at the forefront, because that's what we're really all about, protecting access. And if we can do that, and we think we've got a proven formula to do that, we just need to have enough resources to address the variety of issues. So we'd be happy to talk to anybody about what NCART's doing and how they could be involved at any point that would be convenient.
So thanks for that information on your membership efforts as well as what your day-to-day NCART activities are like. I'm going to now pivot from 2020 into 2021. We're now seeing that people are getting vaccinated. While that will take some time to get everyone to that point, we are starting, I think, to see a light at the end of the tunnel that was 2020. So have you started planning for coming out of this public health emergency? And have you thought about what the ripple effects will be down the line? Because, for instance, I know in your monthly update webinars, early in the pandemic, clinicians were concerned, for instance, that people who needed therapy weren't necessarily getting it and that there could be a possibility of a seating and wheelchair assessment backlog. So are you looking at sort of how 2020 will continue to impact 2021?
We are. And as you touched on, certainly this 2020, the start of that was a very difficult, challenging time for everybody, our country and certainly our industry and the providers, manufacturers, and clinicians in terms of maintaining access for people who rely on CRT. So the things that we were able to get in place at the start of 2020 through policy changes, for example, around telehealth for clinicians or remote services that would involve the supplier employed ATP or being able to do some of the home assessments through remote technology. All those things were put in place and really have proven to be very beneficial through the pandemic, but more importantly, they've shown that they have a value on a permanent basis. So there's some policy changes we're working on around making things permanent post-COVID, Right now, the expectation is the public health emergency declaration is probably going to stay into effect through the rest of this year. So the good news is that gives us an opportunity to work on making some of these policy changes permanent. And then I think also the last year was really a time for companies to look at their operations, and they've been able to adapt and make changes to better serve their customers in a variety of environments. So I think that the changes that were made last year, some will be incorporated permanently, and then other issues we'll be addressing as they come up throughout the rest of this year.
Okay, and I wanted to focus for a minute on telehealth and remote services, because if there was a bright spot in 2020, that bright spot might have been how quickly some of these services, online services, were able to get up and running effectively. So maybe without the pandemic, we don't see the speed and determination that we saw driving these technologies last year. So I know that you are a big supporter of maintaining these options, both telehealth on the clinician side and then remote services on the supplier side. So are you specifically working with people who are making those policies to try to keep these options available going forward?
Yeah, absolutely, Lori. You bring up a good point about the development and the push to, you know, really integrate these technologies specifically around remote services and telehealth for complex rehab. And we began our efforts on this last year, of course, and are continuing to communicate with legislators, with CMS, working with the CRT Remote Services Consortium and leading those efforts there. And, you know, obviously we're working toward the need to permanently authorize physical therapists and occupational therapists as approved telehealth practitioners, and to include the related CPT codes as billable services via telehealth. So currently, we've also coordinated grassroots outreach as an opportunity for advocates, again, at protectmymobility.org, where folks can go to email their members of Congress asking for legislation to be passed that would make these options permanent for CRT. You know, we recognize, of course, that the best practice is for the full CRT team, meaning the consumer, the ATP, and the clinician, to meet in person whenever possible. That will always be the standard. However, as you mentioned, you know, one thing that this pandemic did demonstrate is that there are definitely beneficial applications of telehealth and remote services for complex rehab outside of a public health emergency situation, and we do believe that those need to stick around.
The last time we podcasted was the summer of 2020, and since then, obviously, we have a different administration now in Washington. The Biden administration is very new still, but just in general, when we see a change in the White House, when we also see changes, of course, in the Senate and the House of Representatives, how much does that impact NCART's day-to-day efforts? Meaning, do you have to start from scratch when we have changes because of elections, or are there some foundational elements that you can build upon even when there are changes?
That's a great question, Lori, and definitely something we deal with. Certainly, we know the elections, whether it's the every two-year elections, the every four-year elections for the president, or every six-year for the Senate. It does present some challenges because, as you mentioned, the change in personnel, which always comes with those elections, you never stay static. Some changes during certain years may be more significant, but it does cause us to just kind of pause and just reassess that new environment. You know, who are the new players that have leadership positions, whether that be, you know, the president, obviously, within the Health and Human Services Department or CMS, and then also on the Senate and the House side. So it does require us to evaluate those and get a sense of what the new agenda may be and how best do we incorporate that. I wouldn't say it's starting from scratch because thankfully there's never wholesale changes. So we do have a common core group that we work with, but it's always a challenge if, for example, we may lose any particular champion that we've been working with. And I'm happy to say overall that didn't happen this time around. So I think we have the benefit of building the dialogue with those that are familiar with CRT, but we certainly need to continue to do the educational process within both Congress and the administration. I think President Biden, there's some certainly positive things with his agenda, at least the initial outline that we've had. He still is appointing the folks. You know, we need to get the HHS secretary confirmed and then see who the new CMS administrator is going to be. But the good news is certainly some of the themes relative to inclusion of all communities and his reference to the disability community has been very positive. And I know within the disability community, there's a definite optimism in terms of some of the things that we've been working on, and certainly this goes beyond CRT, but that there will be a greater recognition and attention to policy changes or legislation affecting people with disabilities. We certainly feel when you look at access to complex rehab technology that you know, is right up there on the disability rights list. In fact, many of the people that use CRT talk about that being, you know, a basic civil right, you know, to access equipment and technology so that a person can participate fully, you know, in their community and in society. So we're approaching the current administration with a cautious optimism that we need to have conversations with the folks once they're officially confirmed and put in place, and, you know, when we look down at the staff level. But some of the conversations around inclusion and equity relative to the disability community should have positive implications when it comes to access to CRT.
And I also wanted to check in on the separate Medicare benefit for complex rehab. I know the bills from last year have expired, so I assume the bills will be reintroduced. But my question is, do you anticipate any significant changes when you make those reintroductions? Is that something that you're working on right now?
Yes, we are. And it kind of dovetails to the comment I just made relative to the changing environment. And what we're going to be doing is, you know, there actually is a steering committee of seven organizations that's been guiding the separate category legislation since its inception. And as you said, we started back in 2012. Unfortunately, we've had some issues around the wheelchair accessories, both power and manual, that have taken certainly some of our attention and some of our advocacy work over the last 4 or 5 years. So we're hoping to get that behind us with the final resolution for CRT manual wheelchair accessories. But what the steering committee is going to be doing is taking a look at what the current environment looks like both congressionally and regulatory-wise when we look at CMS, and then take a look at our legislation and what's contained in that and evaluate that against the current environment. We're going to be actually taking some time to talk with some of our congressional champions and also some of the congressional committee staff just to figure out what was going to be the best pathway for us to move forward with the separate category initiative.
Okay, and as my last question, I wanted to just sort of open the microphone to you so you can speak directly on whatever topics you're currently focusing on, whatever you think it's important for us to know about right now. So we're going to be doing this quarterly. That's my goal. So for the first several months of 2021, what will you be focusing on, and what do you think your members and stakeholders and supporters should be focusing on these first few months of the year?
Yeah, I think the priorities as we look at kind of the urgency, if you will, on those issues, the number one issue would be our effort to resolve or to prevent payment cuts to complex manual wheelchair accessories. Because right now, you know, we were successful back in 2019 getting legislation passed to get a suspension of CMS using competitive bidding pricing to reduce payments for accessories used with complex manual wheelchairs. The idea of the 18-month suspension, from Congress's perspective, is it would give CMS enough time to make the needed change on a permanent basis through policy. So we are continuing to have conversations with CMS, and our hope is that they will make the needed changes before that July 1st deadline. We may be circling back and having to look at legislation if that becomes a necessity to offer more time if CMS needs it. But that would be the most important initiative in the short term. So I'd encourage people to stay attuned to our alerts that we send out regularly. And if folks aren't signed up, they could go again to our website, sign up so you get timely alerts on issues. But that would be the number one thing. But we also are actively working on the other things that we mentioned. And, you know, all of these need attention. The telehealth, I think, is a good example that there is congressional legislation being worked on, and we're looking for members to register in with their members of Congress to let them know that when Congress is implementing telehealth legislation, to please include physical therapists and occupational therapists as telehealth practitioners. So we've actually got set up on our website at protectmymobility.org. Again, protectmymobility.org. And people can go there and send a simple email to their members in Congress asking them to include PT and OTs in their initiatives and also in legislation that they'll be crafting. And they expect that that'll probably, the legislative process will probably take place, you know, over the next 30 to 60 days. And then we've talked about the things on the state level relative to potential budget cuts. So there isn't really any one issue because they all have some sense of urgency. And what we found is, you know, when things come up on the radar screen, you can't just kind of set them aside and say, all right, we'll get to that, you know, next month. It's something that we need to be actively working on. So I'd encourage folks to stay attuned to those alerts, and that's the best way to stay current and also to know what you can be doing in the meantime. And maybe I'll throw it to McKay to just put a plug in for, you know, the importance of our collective community, you know, engaging in these things and getting their message to Congress and other policymakers.
Yeah, absolutely, Don. I mean, I think that more folks can get involved. It's just like I was saying earlier, the more that the collective CRT community and all stakeholders, you know, the collective group of us, I guess you could say that, you know, complex rehab touches our lives and plays a role. The more that we can stay updated on everything that's taking place and what the issues are, the more we can keep open lines of communication and are able to talk about meaningful solutions and how to get them implemented and what steps need to be taken. I think that we're definitely far better off as long as, you know, we're working together as that group. And CART certainly does everything that we can to keep those updates, as Don was mentioning, in the forefront through our email system. And like I said, you know, we certainly do our best to keep those updates out there through our email program, through our blog, through our social media posts, other things like that. And of course, you know, our emails are always being checked for anyone who has questions or who needs a little bit of help in certain areas. You know, we're always making ourselves available to help in these areas.
We need you to stay engaged to make sure we can be most effective with the policymakers.
Thanks very much. And with that, we're going to wrap up today's podcast, this one for the first quarter of 2021. Thanks very much again to Don Clayback, the Executive Director of NCART, and to McKay Lee, the Associate Director of NCART. Thanks for joining me today. Thanks for updating us on NCART's priorities for 2021. And especially, thank you for agreeing to meet with me regularly this year. I look forward to sharing the microphone with you again for quarter two.
That's great, Lori, and we want to really thank you also and Mobility Management for all the great work you do. We appreciate this opportunity, and I think you do a great job keeping the collective CRT community informed on what's going on, so thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us, Lori, and we're always happy to chat with you and looking forward to next quarter.
Mobility Management podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our podcasts is to subscribe, and you can go onto our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back again soon.